What's up, Internet? You're tuned to episode 137 of Nintendo Noise, Slipscreen Games' weekly Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Pete and Bessie, joined today by my very good friends and co-hosts, Mr. Stephen Radford.
Hello, hello.
And Miss Sierra Plus Ultra.
Hi.
The gang is back together.
It's a beautiful thing.
Been a while.
It's been way too long. I literally was trying to think about it, and I could not remember the last episode we were all able to get together. So I am. It's a special one for that reason alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sierra, this is also, I believe, your first time recording with Steve in his new setup. Do you want to razz him for how it looks like he's in a horror movie? Because every time I see him, it's like a different horror movie, but now it's like the blood red is... It's a vibe, I guess.
I know.
Yeah, it's still really echoey in here as well. I need to sort this room out at some point, but I just have not had time.
I think it was 2 weeks ago was the one where I felt like somebody was gonna come out of frame and kill Steve. Now I feel like Steve's the killer. The red, you know, it's like it looks a little sinister, but
this is the room in which he disembowels bodies.
Yeah, and now he's taking an ominous sip of water. Like, I don't know about that. That was his poker face. All right, well, you know, everybody, you follow along at home and you let me know if there's any other evidence going on in the background there, because obviously we got a show to do, which I'm going to kick things off with a little PSA, because there is a new firmware update for Nintendo Switch, system update 18.0.1, and it's not a major update, not like anything too crazy to report, but there was just something I wanted to kind of make folks aware of in case you were all affected by it at all. There's an issue that some folks were experiencing where they were not able to connect to a wireless access point when they were like setting up a connection with a new wireless network, which, you know, can be a pretty common problem, right? You know, or if you had to like reset your connection or anything like that, it could lead to some difficulty there. And as a result, some people are struggling to connect to the internet to actually get the update that fixes this problem. And there is a kind of specific thing that you can do that I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention just in case you are one of the folks being impacted. So you're going to want to temporarily change the security settings for your wireless network to use WPA2. AES in parentheses. That's specifically the one you're going to want to connect to, and that'll allow you to connect wirelessly and download the update that you're going to need. And then once you get that going, you should have everything back to normal.
How did this happen now? Like, after 7 years?
18th update, right?
And all of a sudden they broke the Wi-Fi.
Our bad. But, you know, it's the nature of technology, right? Like,
yeah.
Things should just work, but they rarely do. But hopefully, if you were having any trouble getting online, you should be set now after that. So if anybody needed it, hopefully that helped you out. So let's get into the real story this week. All right. The real journalism here, which is we've had the real true Hollywood story revealed of why Samus will never be in Fortnite. And here's the thing. I want to part the curtain here for a minute, because Max reached out to me a couple days ago and was like, "Hey man, like, here's a story for Nintendo Noise this week." And I was like, didn't we already know this? I feel like we talked about this like last year, right? When all the leaks happened, right, Steve? And that's the thing. We did. We knew this. Mm-hmm. We knew that they wanted Samus in Fortnite, that there were plans for it, but they never materialized. And we never quite learned why. Until now, because, of course, we had an interview this week with Donald Muster, who's the CCO over at Epic Games, on his way out, actually, but was talking about the kind of metaverse project that's ongoing at Fortnite and kind of the evolution of the game and everything. And they were talking about that leak and kind of the Nintendo of it all and why it didn't end up happening. And he confirmed what I think many of us probably assumed back then, which was that Nintendo didn't want to play ball the way that Fortnite wants to play ball, right? They didn't want to see a Samus skin being played on PlayStation or Xbox or PC. And this is what he had to say about it. they got really hung up on their characters showing up on platforms that weren't their platforms. They would be thrilled to have Nintendo characters in Fortnite, but just only if it's on their platform. And for me and all of Epic, we're like, that is an absolute must. We want to make sure that Fortnite is the same experience no matter what screen or device you're playing on. And, you know, I think most of us could probably have guessed that that would have been the reason. And the reason I wanted to bring it up today was, do you think that Nintendo's kind of unwillingness to play ball here is a sign of confidence or arrogance? Because it is interesting to me that, you know, when you think about the kind of context of Metroid, right? Metroid is not Mario. It's not Zelda. It's never as much as the iconography of Metroid and the influence of Metroid is, you know, I think well documented and you know, there's a lot of respect on the name. It's never been a bestseller the way that some of Nintendo's other kind of marquee franchises have been. And, you know, the idea of Samus being in Fortnite, you know, it's something that could really raise her profile with younger players and potentially increase interest in that franchise. And I think it's something that I couldn't help but wonder was that a missed opportunity on their part? Was that a failure?
Somewhat, yeah, I think it probably was. I also think it's just a bit hypocritical, especially considering when you look at Smash Brothers and the number of characters from other video games that aren't owned by Nintendo that are on other platforms or owned by other platform holders that are on a Nintendo only game is a bit
strange.
That's
fine because they're in control.
Yeah, it's a bit strange to me. I would have expected them to want to take advantage of this, especially as Metroid Dread was coming out in 2021. It would have been a good, obviously they knew that was in the pipeline. It would have been a good way to kind of get the marketing going, because this was I believe queued up for December 2020, around the same time that I think Master Chief was in Fortnite.
So it was in 2020 during chapter 2 season 5 of Fortnite. It was they had a gaming legend series, and that was I believe where Master Chief and then Kratos both got added to the
game. And obviously, both PlayStation and Xbox were in agreement that it was the right thing to do to get on Fortnite. And you could even buy those skins on the other platforms, right? I could buy the Kratos skin on an Xbox and play that on my Xbox or on my phone or on my Switch. And neither of them seemed to have any issue with it. And I would imagine there's a lot of money involved here. So you've got to think it probably is a little bit of arrogance on Nintendo's part. But they did the same thing with Minecraft as well. When Minecraft first came to Switch, you could get it with the kind of Mario and Luigi skins, but you couldn't view them on other platforms. So if you went to go like play with someone who was playing on Xbox, they just saw you in the normal skin. It wouldn't show up. It was very strange.
Like comically selfish. It's like really ridiculous. Like the lengths they will go to not let their IP appear on other consoles. Yeah, I'm totally on the same page as Steve. It's just like really, really obnoxious that like other characters from other games can come to Nintendo like titles, but not the other way around. And I mean, yeah, it'd be like goofy if like Mario was in Fortnite. I mean, like I would expect them to like not play with like their like core characters, but like Samus really could use the visibility.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's not that serious. It's really not that serious.
I think that's the thing of it for me is like, I understand in theory, right? The idea of like wanting to control your IP and like how it's represented and the fact that like Nintendo has had, you know, bad experiences in the past when they've not been in control, right? Like the original Mario Brothers movie, right, is like a famous example where like they kind of let their hands get off the reins and, you know, it reflected poorly on them and it kind of scared them off from doing certain kinds of projects, you know? And like, I understand wanting to, I guess, be cautious, but I feel like at this point, you know, Fortnite is a kind of, you know,
They're good kind of citizens when it comes to taking other people's IP and respecting it and, you know, you've got Disney, for example, one of the largest companies in the world with some of the most iconic and recognizable
characters. And a very image conscious company, right? Yeah. Like a company that is definitely worried about how they're portrayed.
So I don't think it's a case that they were potentially worried that the Epic would do something wrong here and not be in control. It very much is about the fact that, no, if you want to play a Nintendo game, if you want to use a Nintendo character, you have to buy a console in order to do it. Which has always been the case for Nintendo games. But it's strange to me that they just aren't willing to play ball at all. Like, this would have been beneficial to them, I believe.
To me, it feels like being unwilling to allow like Lego to license your, you know, it's like, yeah, like why would you not want to be in, you know, like unless you have some kind of like ethical reservation where you're like, you know, I don't like the game or I don't like the idea of the metaverse or whatever. I don't want Samus to be at a concert, you know, listening to Snoop Dogg or something like that. Right. Like, I guess like there's, you know, a conversation to be had there. But if what Donald is saying is true and it's like it's not a Fortnite issue, it's a, you know, crossplay issue, right? It's a Samus being somewhere else issue. That to me, like, I think does like end up just feeling like arrogant, you know, and having that kind of like, what are you doing? And I can't help but like come back to what you said, Sierra, where it's like, this is just not that big a deal. Like the worst case scenario is not serious, you know?
I know. You cannot stop Samus from listening to Snoop Dogg.
You just can't do it.
What kind of music do you think she's into? Do you think she likes Snoop Dogg, or is she going to go to the Lady Gaga concert in Fortnite instead?
I feel like she's into vaporwave. Like it's like it's not, she's not listening to stuff with music. It's like a lot, or I'm sorry, with lyrics. It's a lot of like ambient,
the lo-fi hip-hop on the guy.
No, I think it's like thumping bass, like ambient, like synth music. You know, it's like focus music, so that when, you know, you're bobbing and weaving and rolling into the size of a fucking tennis ball, as you know, you got to be focused, you got to have that awareness. You can't be getting distracted by lyrics. I think the lo-fi is too chill, you know. It's got to be something that gets the blood pumping.
Oh yeah,
I think there's probably moments when she's walking around and there's not much to do, you know, like she's killed everything and she's trying to find that last power up in order to proceed to the next area. And she's popping the chill music on because she's really worn out from doing all those like shrine stars or whatever they're called.
Chill beats to upgrade your armor too. So I guess kind of the last thing I'd want to ask you two before I guess we put a pin in this is, why do you think that Nintendo either is or thinks that they can kind of go their own way and that they don't need to play ball the way that others seemingly need to play ball? Because this is kind of an attitude that's defined them for a really long time, right? Like they're often happy to eschew what everyone else is doing and kind of go their own way, and when it works for them, it works really well, right? Like we talked not that long ago about how they're sitting on this massive pile of cash. They seem to be at kind of an all-time high in terms of success, and are staring down the barrel of a new generation that, you know, if they don't fumble the bag, like they're gonna seemingly continue that success, right? So what is it?
Just because it's their legacy. They're one of the OGs. They have arguably the second most recognizable character in history after Mickey Mouse. Everyone knows what Mario is and who he is and what he looks like and what he sounds like. And I think because they can make those characters and the kids love them, that they know they'll sell the console and the game to you. It's the same reason they can continue charging $60 for or $70 for a game 7-8 years after the game launched, and never making a sale on those games and never reducing the price of their console because it sells. They had the odd kind of faux pas with the Wii U, for example, but I think aside from that one miss, they've had more hits than misses. And when it comes to their characters, I think they have a lot more hits than misses. There's really only the odd game I can think of, like something like Arms, for example, that just hasn't
I knew
resonated
Arms
in
was
the
gonna
same
catch
way.
A stray. Everybody leave Arms alone. What do you think, Sierra? Any thoughts?
I don't like arms. That's my
All right, we'll leave it there. We're going to jump into some conversation around Steve's impressions of the Delta emulator that has been taking Apple users by storm in just a second here. But before we do that, let me remind you that this episode of Nintendo Noise is brought to you by our Patreon producers for the month of April. They are, of course, Arnold J. Rimmer, Christopher Valenz, Gabriel Hasselmeyer, a.k.a. Sobe, Snackigo, Steve Stompy, Susan Likes Cats and Also Boobies, Ty the Dude, Voodoo Vic, and Wakahula. Thank you all so much for your support over on patreon.com/flipscreengames. You're all the real stuff, the real, and we greatly appreciate your support of this and all of our sister shows. Remember, if you want to go above and beyond like they did, if you want to write into the show like everyone does for the question block, if you want to go check out some of those sister shows, if you want to join the Discord and keep the conversation going between episodes, and much more, head over to flipscreen.games. That's the website where you will find links to all the places that we are, all over the internet, all the ways that you can get involved or show your support. They'll be right there for you to click on. However you choose to do so, we thank you for tuning in to another episode of Nintendo Noise. Steve, tell me about this Delta thing, because here's the thing. Yeah. I'm an Android guy, right? I'm not on iOS. Sierra's with me, right? We're lowly little Android users, God forbid we want some choice. And you know, to me, I see all the hype around this thing and I'm like, guys, we've been able to do this on our smartphones since 2011, right? So what's the deal, Delta? What's so special about it?
So we spoke briefly about it on the Flip Screen Games podcast last week, but Apple recently changed their rules as part of the EU stuff, that they now allow retro emulators on the store. They don't define what retro games are. They just say that we allow retro game emulators. And Delta, you've been able to sideload it if you have like an Apple developer account or use this thing called Alt Store for a while. But outside of the EU now, you can just install this from the App Store. Inside the EU, because of a bunch of weird ways that Apple are now charging developers, you have to install this thing called Alt Store. You can now get separate app stores in the EU, but the emulator is kind of like a bit of an all-in-one. It supports NES, SNES, Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, DS, N64, and the Sega Genesis. And you can just feed it ROMs and it will download all the artwork for you and you can just play the games. There's no configuration needed at all. Nice. You can just pick them out of your files on your phone and just away you go. And it's a really good emulator. You can like add custom skins in there. There's like nice haptic feedback on the buttons when you press them, so it really feels like you're clicking a button. Or you can just connect up a Bluetooth controller and use that. You know, maybe you've got like a Razer, a Backbone, or a Kishi or whatever. You can connect that up and just kind of play it as if you would any other game.
I've seen a lot of people like taking the kind of that little pocket size 8-bit dough and like,
yeah,
being like, this is like,
I can
a
imagine
great,
that would work well.
Yeah, it's a really good system, right? Between that and the phone, like you can fit both in your pocket, you know, or like in a purse or a small, you know, like a satchel, like little kind of small bag or something. And really light footprint for you to be able to, you know, jump into some pretty beefy games on the go. Like I imagine for like flights and stuff like that, that would be like a really great solution for a lot of folks. Certainly a lot.
Yeah, and I think
a lot less than like bringing a Steam Deck with you or something, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? Is now for the first time, iOS users can just take their phone out of their pocket and can kind of continue where they left off in a game. It does save states as soon as you close the app. You can kind of carry on where you left off. So I've been playing a little bit of Wario Land 4 on there. I tried out some Metroid Fusion. I haven't played any of the DS stuff. I know Doc in the Discord's been showing some screenshots of his setup with, like, he's been playing Animal Crossing on the DS, and he's got like a nice skin on there.
Nice.
But it just works really, really well. There's no performance issues. It just works straight out of the box. And because you've always got your phone with you, if you don't want to play like a crappy mobile game riddled with ads, this is like a great solution now. And this was number one on the App Store for a good few days. I think it may still be number one in its category, but it was the number one downloaded app for a long time. And the developer, Riley Tester, posted on Threads Thank God the core technology fee only applies to downloads in the EU, because in 2 days they had 1.43 million downloads.
Oh my God. And,
so in the EU now, for every download over 1 million, even on a free app, you have to pay 50 cents, which is why it's not available on the App Store in the EU, and you have to kind of sideload it still. It's a pain, but it's just one of those things Apple have implemented.
Would it cost them like hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's the thing. This is a completely free emulator. There's no cost involved. There's no ads in there. You can just download it and just kind of go, which is kind of crazy, really, because most emulators would chuck ads in there, or charge you, like, even if it's only like $1.99, they charge you for it. But, I think that's one of the reasons this is really kind of taken off. One, it's the first good emulator in the store, and two, it's completely free and it's easy to use, and you can just kind of feed it the ROMs that you've got. And
the fact that it plays like all the different consoles too is like, I'm imagining being on iOS, right, never having access to one of these before, and then now it's like it's all just plug and play, and it's like the most optimized, like, like almost like Emu Deck kind of experience or whatever, is like, it's awesome. I mean, I've got whatever GBA emulator, like, that I paid $1 for the ad free version in like 2011, and I redownload it every once in a while, but like, it definitely seems like it's quite a bit more advanced.
Yeah, there's a lot there. And there was another emulator that got submitted to the App Store, which is a Dolphin iOS. It's a Dolphin emulator, so GameCube and Wii. That got blocked by Apple, because in order to emulate a GameCube or a Wii, it needs to do what's called just-in-time compiling. So it basically compiles on the fly, and Apple will not allow that in the App Store. So unfortunately, Dolphin's never going to come. I think N64 is probably the cutoff of where we can expect emulation to be, and I think that's probably where they're going to draw the line on what a retro console is, at least for the time being. I think anything N64 and older, you can play. Anything above that, I can't imagine we ever see come to the App Store.
Hmm. Are there like... Go ahead, Sierra.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Hardline definition of like how many years like something like has to exist for it to be retro? Like,
not on Apple's side, they've just said retro. Me and Pete did an episode all about this where we kind of figured it was a generation and a half. It was 1.5 generations ago, made it a retro game. So if you think like the end of the middle of the PS4 era, right, or I guess it would be the end of the PS3, middle of the PS3 era would be where we would consider like a retro game at this point.
Okay.
I mean, I guess now it would probably move up, right? Because we're halfway through the PS5 generation.
Yeah,
you're
probably looking at like that whole generation, the whole PS3 and before is like,
I mean...
I would consider the Wii a retro console at this point. So it does,
right?
It does kind of make sense.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve, because I mean, like, we've been talking about the 3DS Wii U thing, right? And it's like, we were talking about how the 3DS is like not that old. And it's like, I mean, that's only one generation ago, but like, I mean, is it retro now? They took all the online support off. Like, it's, it's like, it's essentially like dead tech, right? Like, is it not retro?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I don't know if you guys spoke about it on the show, about the Pretendo thing, that you can kind of get it back.
Yeah, Max and I did a whole episode about it. If you want to go check it out, I think it was not last week. Last week was when Sierra and I did the Indie World. So it would have been the week before that. We did an episode about Pretendo. And there's like a whole system, basically, that you can use to get back online and play some of these games. It's like on a case-by-case basis. But go check out that episode if you want. I'll link to it here. And you can like get the whole breakdown of how you can do it for yourself if you are still interested in playing any of those games online. But yeah, I mean,
I think for me, if you have to do stuff like that in order to play games or download games, that's a retro console at that point.
Right.
I don't think you can say, like, you cannot take the console, the game out of the box, put it in and play it with your friends anymore. It's just not possible without having to do these hacks and workarounds with community made software like Pretendo. So I think that would be fair game to emulate, but Citra's gone away. I don't know if we're going to have anything that replaces it. It was part of the Yuzu lawsuit. That one went away as well. So we don't really have a decent 3DS emulator anymore.
We'll get one.
So I don't know. Yeah, I would imagine we will at
People
some point.
Already.
And you can find Citra around if you want to use it. But the developers have kind of gone underground.
Yeah, reasonable. So, you know, I think while we're talking about the retro stuff, or I guess the debatably retro stuff on this side of things, I want to jump into a bit of a human interest story that I saw this week, which was another 3DS game that has been revealed to have been impacted by the kind of server shutdown, which is the Dream Suite feature from Animal Crossing New Leaf has been a casualty of the shutdown. And it was making a lot of headlines this week because Jeff Gerstmann, who is best known for back in the day, he was an editor in chief at GameSpot, excuse me, and then was one of the co-founders of Giant Bomb. And now he's, you know, just like a Twitch streamer and an independent. He was telling a story on stream about how he had to explain what happened to his 3-year-old daughter because she like was using this feature and still playing the game and can't read yet. And he had to explain the error message to her, and that she like burst into tears and was like so devastated by this. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, like this game is not that old. It came out in what, 2012? It's like,
yeah.
It's 12 years old, but it's like that's core functionality that is just gone now. You know, it's like people were still using it, you know.
Kind of scares me as well that this is going to happen continually, that the Switch's generation is going to be even worse because the games are way more connected.
Yes.
Think about like New Horizons, for example. I'm never going to be able to go over to anyone else's island. How much of the online stuff's going to be turned off? I won't be able to send letters to anyone anymore. I won't be able to use the Dream stuff. There's going to be so much of that game that's turned off. But things like Splatoon 2 and 3, I won't be able to play those anymore. Mario Kart Online, you won't be able to play that. Smash, you won't be able to play that. It's like, yeah, these games have single player elements to them, but the core features of them are multiplayer experiences, and those are just going to be gone forever. And unless Nintendo keeps backwards compatibility in the next console, which I hope they will,
or, you know, again, like fan efforts and stuff, like, and you know, like Nintendo's famously hostile towards those, but, you know, I think some of it, like the nice thing with Pretendo is I think it exists in such a way that they don't really have illegal grounds to attack them for it. But I mean, laws change.
They could potentially, with like the reverse engineering stuff and being able to circumvent copyright protection, I don't know if they would win that lawsuit, but Nintendo didn't need to take Yuzu to court and they still managed to win that one.
Yeah, but that was one of those things where like when we took that apart, I remember you being like, well, this is where they're actually doing something that's illegal, right? And it's like,
yeah, it was the Patreon thing and like clearly the piracy of the ROMs before the games had launched.
Whereas like my understanding of like Pretendo like is very much like, hey, like we're doing this in a way that's ethical. We're reverse, like we're taking logs and like like we're recompiling things ourselves. We're not ripping stuff. So it's like, you know, obviously that's a thing that we're like, they could still go after them and they have the resources of a major company and they don't, right? The Pretendo team wouldn't. But I also feel like it's probably the kind of thing that like there probably isn't a big reason to worry because like what is the, you know, unless
it's not like there's an alternative. It's not like you're paying Nintendo for online support because, you know, even if they were charging for it, you can't go online anymore because they shut the servers down.
Yeah. Like if they're, you know, if they were offering an alternative, then that would be one thing. But, you know, they've said that they don't care about this, that, you know, they're abandoning this functionality because it's no longer, you know, financially prudent to continue to support it. You know, so the idea that, you know, now that's going to fall on fans, right, to maintain that stuff for, you know, for posterity and for like not only for your ability to play it in the future, but for like people's ability to see what it was like and experience it, you know, in the way that, you know, I guess we take for granted right now, right? That like that's a thing that, you know, you see a movie and you can see it again, you read a book and you can read it again. And like that's how it's always been with games, but with live service stuff, you know.
Yeah, imagine when Fortnite inevitably closes down. You're never going to see any of those characters again. Samus, even though she was never in there, even if she had made it in, you're never going to see it on any console, let alone a Nintendo console.
Yeah. What message does that send where, like, you create, like, a whole experience Like, and then, like, over the course of the next, like however many years later, you're like, all right, like, we're shutting down this functionality. Like, you won't be able to enjoy the game the same way again. Like, do you expect people to just move on? Do you not want people to enjoy the game as it was? Like,
I feel like it, to me, it feels like it trivializes the release, you know? Because it's like, when you think about, like, the greatest games of all time, right? It's like, so many of them are things that you can go back and play and they're still good. And, like, they still, right, you know, they hold up to this day, right? And that's, like, why they're classics. But it's like, to think that they'll, you know, there is going to come a point inevitably where, like, some of the quote unquote most important games of all time, right, like, just don't exist anywhere and they're not playable. And they're, you know, and it's like, there are literally games that have been lost to time, you know, like, literally, unfortunately, like, the first video game ever made, right? Like, there's not a preserved copy of it anymore. And that's a shame. But, like, the idea that, like, that could happen with something like Fortnite or, you know, like, I mean, like, World of Warcraft or something like that, right? Where it's like, you know, there may come a point where, you know, the folks that have supported it, right, like, age out, or to be, you know, a little bit more morbid, like, die, right? And it's like, there's a point where there aren't new players coming in. It's just legacy players that are supporting something. And, you know, yeah, like, that's gonna happen, right? Like, all things end. And, you know, I think that's, like, one thing when you're talking about a game that the point of it is multiplayer, but I think when you're talking about these games that are single player experiences primarily, and, you know, that get all this kind of online functionality, like, shoved in them, that then becomes, like, central to non-online parts of the experience, it's like, you know, yeah, like, I think that's really concerning, you know? And, like, how many stories have we had about games that are like, look at Diablo, right? Like, that game always, yeah, needs to be online. Why?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. It's ridiculous. But with something like Animal Crossing, it would have been great. And I granted, the resources aren't there and they've moved on to another game, right? But patch something in so that you can continue to use the Dream Suite, but not go to other people's towns or islands, that you can just visit ones that are maybe randomly generated or something, or there's a select number of ones it randomly takes you to.
So that you could save, some of them or something, right? Like, you could save them to a drive, right? And, like, have the ability to access it.
Yeah, because then that stops, like, things like this happening where, and I can't imagine trying to explain to a 3-year-old, like, the intricacies of what a server is and why it's turned off, and, like, all she wants to do is go and look at other people's towns, and, like, you're there trying to have to explain, like, no, it's like this random, the computer is somewhere that's, like, got all this stuff stored on it and it's now been turned off.
Sorry, sweetheart. Corporate interests. Corporate interests have made it so that your beloved gameplay experience is no longer financially viable.
Here's how to radicalize your 3-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so here you go, little one. I'm going to teach you about the evils of capitalism right now. This feeling that you feel, it's because some guy in a suit decided that your feelings didn't matter. you know, we joke, but yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer to see this. And, you know, I'm glad that there is a concerted effort being made by, you know, the community to keep some of this stuff alive as much as we can, right? For as long as we can.
Yeah. Nothing is sacred to these ghouls.
True words have never been spoken. So I think I want to end things today on a question from one Andrew Valentine, who wrote in over on the Discord as part of our question block. And said, do you think the indie world format should change? If so, how? And I thought this was an interesting question. We just came off the indie world last week. I'd love to talk about format a little bit. And I figure this also gives Steve an opportunity. If there's any games he wanted to highlight that he wanted to shout out, he can do that too.
What are your thoughts on it? Because the format for me is kind of just the same as a Nintendo Direct, but it's really kind of maybe a little bit more low key, right? It's
yeah.
Like, they usually sandwich a big title at the beginning, or there's like the and there's one more thing at the end, and you're kind of anticipating it's Silk Song, but it's not. It's something else.
I think that's part of the problem for me, is like, I feel like Nintendo, I probably rightfully so, but I think like with the partner presentations and the indie world presentations, I feel like they've kind of like signaled to people that they're not as big a deal as Nintendo Directs. And I think that's like maybe what I would change, is like, I think if we're gonna say that these are not as big a deal, then maybe we kind of move away from like secrets being part of it. Cause I think like Sierra and I talked a lot about how it must be really shitty to be, you know, the SteamWorld Dig 2? I can't remember.
SteamWorld Heist.
Thank you. SteamWorld Heist 2 team, where like you're the one more thing, and everybody was expecting Silk Song, and then it's not Silk Song, and everyone's, you know, like in the chat, like being like, ah, this isn't what I wanted. You know, it's like, that's like, that sucks. And I think if, you know, we're kind of operating under the assumption that something like Silk Song is like too big a deal to be at one of those events, I think that says that like they have not really treated those events very well, right? Like, I think you either need to have bigger announcements there and have bigger like one more things or whatever that are going to meet people's expectations, or you should maybe kind of do like the PlayStation state of play thing, where you're just like, this is what we're going to talk about, right? And not set people up for disappointment. And it doesn't have to be every single announcement, right? But like, you could say like, hey, like this is going to be headlined by this and this and that kind of thing. And like, I know that that's like a tough thing too, because if a game's trying to be revealed, then like that takes away from that. But it's also like, I feel like I think it
works for directs. Like, it does work for directs. Like, I think about the Smash Brothers reveal and the Animal Crossing reveal in the directs. Like, those are huge.
It should be like a hype thing.
But I do. I also don't want to lose the indie world brand. I like it, but it is strange, right? Like, when do Nintendo just go, oh, you're too big for an indie world? We're gonna move you up, right? Like,
yeah, true. You know,
it's like, oh, you're the creator of Stardew Valley. Well, we'll put Haunted Chocolatier. We'll shove that in a Nintendo Direct. We're not gonna put that in, you know.
It feels kind of disrespectful to the games that are in the indie presentation. And it's like, and I get that, like, there is kind of a difference. Like, there are those kind of games that like do elicit more of a reaction and more hype and everything. But to me, it's like, why not anchor the indie worlds around games like that more? And I mean, I guess arguably, like, that's what they did with SteamWorld Heist, but it's just kind of like, it's not as big as the game that everybody wanted it to be. And maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah. For me though, like, I'm always more excited to watch the indie worlds because it's always a much wider variety of game. It's not like I'm coming in and I'm maybe going, why are there so many farming games, or why are there so many?
What are you talking about? You know, that's literally a thing we've said about how many indie worlds that there's been too many farming games.
I was going to say, they heard our complaints. They heard us loud and clear. Not a single farming sim in last week.
No.
Yeah.
You love to see it.
There was so much good stuff in there. Like, the more I see of Animal Well, the more excited I am. That's the one from Big Mode, which is Donkey's publishing label. It looks really cool. Me and Pete, we both played Another Crab's Treasure during the Steam Next Fest, and I'm excited to see that one finally
and
making it to the Switch.
Over on the Flip Screen Games podcast today, you can go check out Max's review of the game. Well, today, it was yesterday, so it's out. So go listen to Max's review. There's a link here now. Go click on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in that presentation. I think it was a strong one, but all I could see was, where was Silk Song? It was always just, where is Silk Song? And that is a shame. But I don't think that's any fault of the indie world. I think that's because we've seen Silk Song being rated around the world and it showing up on April 1st on the Xbox Store. And so they're clearly ramping up for a launch. We just don't know when that's going to be revealed. Yeah. But it's no way it's getting revealed at an indie world. It's going to get revealed at a big presentation. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that revealed at an Xbox event, because they partnered with them for that initial reveal there as well.
I feel like the initial reveal was at a direct, though.
Well, the initial reveal was part of their
it was
Kickstarter. But you know,
I guess that's true. It's been revealed like 4 times.
Yeah, and like I remember seeing it last year. I don't know.
Oh, and there was like it was at that Xbox event a couple years ago where they were like, "Oh, next 18 months," and it's like, "Wait, what?" That was like 3 years ago.
There's been like a playable demo at conventions that people have played. Like, it's very strange that this game has just not been seen for a very long time at this point, but. To take it back to Andrew's question, I don't really know how I would change the format. I think it probably is moving some of the larger titles away and not being like, here's all the small stuff before you get to the meat and potatoes at the end of like what you're here to see. Because it does a disservice to a lot of the games, but it does also make me sit through the entire presentation to view all of the other games. And I do often find games that I would have never seen before. I don't want Nintendo to stop doing them. I like the indie.
No, yeah, me neither.
There's a big emphasis on it.
I agree. Like I like that they have an indie focused event. I feel like I want it to feel like it gets the same level of like pomp and circumstance as like a proper direct. And I feel like when there's a big,
like, to some extent, I think it does. Like I've seen ads for it on Instagram. Yeah. Like they're constantly showing it to me. They're just like, check out all these new games coming. I just think sometimes I don't think they want to do a direct that's just indies. And I think sometimes they just don't have any other games to show. And I think it's probably what the case at the moment. They're probably waiting until summer to show like around when E3 would have been to show what they've got next. But we're also kind of in that limbo state where it really does feel like there's another console coming and we don't really know what else is coming from Nintendo at this point.
Yeah, we actually had another question from Andrew that I think we'll probably talk about at some point, but it was about kind of like the exclusives that have been released so far this year. And I thought it was kind of interesting because to my knowledge, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, I don't think any of us have played any of the big, really big, quote unquote, releases they've had this year. And I think
I played some of Another Code. I picked that one up before I moved, but I haven't had a chance to play as much as I would have liked. It's a decent remake, but you know, I liked it on the DS. Not much has changed there. It is a remake, same as Mario versus Donkey Kong is a remake.
And that's the thing, is like it's no slight against these games, but I think it's just kind of like speaking to the fact that I just feel like what is on offer is not super compelling this year, and it does kind of feel like a lull and like a drop off after a real, real high last year, right? Of having, you know, several major releases that really stood out, right? And competed for Game of the Year and like all that stuff. And I think even if you vibe with, you know, any of the games that that Andrew listed here, right? Like Another Code, the Splatoon 3 DLC Side Order, Mario vs. Donkey Kong, Princess Peach Showtime, like, that's great, but are any of those games going to be like Game of the Year contenders at the end of the year? And like even in the conversation, probably not, right? And it's like, that's okay. Like, not everything needs to be a marquee title, but, you know, I think it does kind of speak to the idea that like the momentum has slowed this year, right? Like, and it does feel like the calm before the storm almost. And yeah, you know, I think it leads to opportunities for you to like have those kinds of moments of like, all right, like, what are we doing here, you know? But we'll leave it there for today. Thank you to everybody who wrote in on the question block. Thank you for tuning into the show. Thank you for being a listener, a member of the community. You know, we appreciate you. If you want to write in, you want to get involved in next week's show, you want to get your thoughts right on the air, or maybe even with a main topic, you can hit us up in a bunch of different ways. Head over to flipscreen.games. That's the website where you will find links to all the places we are, all over the web, all the ways you can get involved. If you want to go above and beyond and show your support, there's links to our Patreon. You can get the show early. You can get all kinds of cool perks and goodies, early access, all that stuff. However you choose to get involved or show your support, we thank you for tuning in to another episode of Nintendo Noise. For the crew, I've been Pete. I did it backwards again. I'm all fucked up on Discord now. She's been Sierra. He's been Steve. We'll see you next week.